And we're going to go in 3, 2, 1. See the way I can hit that mark? That's because it was my mark. Welcome to the show, everybody. Another week here with the Suspendables. Coming up on today's show, it never fails. It is getting better and better all the time. We caught Rusty Ainwood. He's had a couple. He was a few deep, so we got some great stories for him. One of them about an exchange he had with King Clancy, of all guys, okay? He got taken by by a car dealer one time. Hilarious story. How he learned about red wine. We can thank Brian Savage for that. He talks about him. He's got another brother, Bruce, who did play hockey, and we bring that up with Russ to talk about that dynamic with him and his two brothers, Jeff and Bruce. Tom Arnold, okay? You're not going to believe what he's done, okay? We got that and much, much more coming up. Thanks a lot to Elite Promotional Marketing. They've been on board with us for a few weeks now, helping us out with our T-shirts that we're doing, the Suspendables, and they're starting a web store. I don't know how to explain to you what they can do, but it's like this. You know everything you've ever seen with a company logo? And you go, I think that would be good. These guys can do that. Check them out online. Elite Promotional Marketing. Thanks a lot. Here we go. Leave that in, Steve. I like that. Whenever you're ready, Jim. We've been recording for a long time right now. Hi again, everybody. It's another week. That's the way it always happens. Whenever you're ready, Jim, we're here. Yeah. It's another week of the Suspendables.
Come on, Jimmy!
Come on. You can do it, Jim. I'm Jungle Jim, and Russ Courtnell's on the other end again. And God, we live to breathe another week.
Yeah.
And how are you, Rusty?
I'm good. Are you back from a meeting? Because you're a little late.
No. Well, Russ, listen. I take piano lessons now, okay?
Oh, God.
I thought I better do this. And this kid I take them from, his name's Victor. I don't know if you ever go through that. You probably don't, but there we go. I got a let's all pause, White Claw. Nice. I got to admit, Russ, so like I say, I don't know if you ever go through this, but this kid is so freaking smart, okay? He's writing classical music. He's a unbelievable piano.
This is your teacher?
Yeah, he's writing classical
and
music.
And he's 8.
Yeah, he's 22 years old.
No, he's okay. 8 years old. Quit
yeah,
lying.
He could be.
His parents are there while he's giving you a lesson, you fucking idiot.
But he's so brilliant, and he's trying to explain things to me.
Timmy has to have a nap now, and then we'll continue the lesson after his nap.
And then he's going to play a bunch of...
So he's 22. Beethoven. Okay. All serious.
So he's 22. Have you been drinking today?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. So he's 22. And I just sit there and I just shrivel up, you know? I'm like, I'm so freaking dumb. And
no,
you know
you're
where
not
else
dumb.
I get this?
Hey, don't say that. Don't be so hard on yourself.
The same thing happens to me, Russ, when I love to follow rich people around. Okay? I got...
No shit.
I got a lot of successful friends.
Since 82.
Yeah. You included, and you know, we have a laugh, but they're just in a different bracket success wise, you know. And when these guys start talking, you know, like the guy who is so instrumental in this podcast getting off the ground, Bill Yeady, who owns this company, Global Story Network. So that'd be a typical example, you know. When I met that guy through you, and they sit down and they tell their story. Okay, I just begin to sort of go into the fetal position when they like. It, you know, when these guys got so much money and they're so successful.
Well, you're describing yourself until your wife kicked you out.
That whole thing, you know, that whole small little.
That car, was you know? your world. Your wife was a doctor. You're living in Edmonton. You can do whatever you want. Oh, you totally screwed that up.
I did screw it up.
I mean, how many guys out there would love to marry a beautiful woman who happens to be a doctor.
Yeah.
I mean, you had it all.
How did you screw?
Oh my God, you're going to leave the show right now and go
what
back
are you
to
doing?
Therapy.
Oh my God, I'm going to go lie face down in the snow at 30 below. I'm just out here, okay?
Yeah, summing up my life. That's in your living room.
I know. Anyway, like this. So this, like Bill, right? You hear a story. He's like, okay, what's your story, Bill? Well, I started this. Wham, I'm a billionaire. What? Yeah, it's like, what? Yeah, I had nothing. You know, I had nothing, and I made some good investments, and I did this, but I had this idea.
Mr. Jerome, would you like another shrimp cocktail? As he's telling the story, he's got 42 maids and butlers.
I know. We went to the guy's house and said, this isn't a fucking house. This is like six houses, you know? Like, you know, just reek of success, you know? But super good guy, super down to
earth. Oh, my God, he's such a great guy.
But you're kind of one of those guys, too, you know, that... Like, you were a very successful hockey player, right? You played a really high level your whole career. But a lot of people don't know about you. It's like, what's he doing when he's away? You're like a super, uber successful business guy. And
well, I wouldn't go that far.
Well, you're pretty, like when did you make your, like, when did it break for you business-wise? When did you make your first million?
Now we're getting personal.
I know, exactly. That's what we got to do with this show. We got to bring... Some guy gave us a little thing. Hey, the show's a little flat. I don't know if it's going to have legs.
Little, no, I mean, hey, if you're going to be involved in business, you're going to win some, lose some. So they've been good. But real estate, thank God for Harold Ballard's daughter who got me into it when I was 19. That has been something that I'm good at and... It's been good.
What was your first deal? Yeah, we don't need numbers unless you want to give them. We love the numbers.
I bought my first house in Toronto when I was playing for the Leafs.
Yep.
And I bought it for $230,000, and I sold it 9 months later for about $280,000. And then I bought my next house for $415,000. I sold it for $535,000. And then,
who's counting?
Yeah, but then that kind of stuff. Like I had... You know, I always tell young people who don't have kids that are thinking about real estate, I go, don't fall in love with the house. Get in there or a condo or whatever. Just get in, fix it up, try to sell it for a profit, and then go on to your next one. In Canada, you can, you know, if you stay in a house for, I think it's for just over a year, then you can sell it and not pay tax if it's your primary residence. And
right.
Then buy another one. I mean, you can't do that as a business like every year, but you can make tax-free money. But I tell young people in Canada what a great way to make money when you can buy and sell real estate and not pay tax. But that, you know, the one thing I didn't do right was the guys who have all the money and
win a Stanley Cup.
Just kidding. Yeah, I didn't win a Stanley Cup. But the guys who have all the money are the ones that have rental properties. I mean, apartment, you know, you've met them at the golf course. I mean,
sure.
You know, those are the guys that whistle when they're like walking down the fairway. they don't have a care in the world. Somebody's paying them rent.
But they don't have their stockbroker on the phone going, what happened?
Yeah.
they're kind of bulletproof.
But anyways, I've won some, I've lost some, but I do enjoy real estate.
You've won more than you've lost, though.
Well, I'm talking to you.
Notoriously, though, Russ, and I'm assuming you're probably one of these guys who would love to talk to young millionaire hockey players. Notoriously, hockey players get into bad deals.
We always hear about the bad deals. We don't hear about the good deals. I think it's overdone. The young players today have financial advisors. I think we've covered this on the show where when we played, you know, not making a lot of money, there wasn't a guy from Goldman Sachs waiting for you after practice going, hey, come on, I want to take you for lunch. It was the guy who owned a bar that needed a partner. He's like, yeah, you can buy 50% of my bar, or buy a life insurance policy. But today, all the young players that I talk to, and I talk to them about, you know, hey, what are you guys doing? Not getting personal, just making sure they're on the right track. Every single one of them that I've talked to has a financial advisor. And if you want to talk about their money, you got to talk to this person. And it's phenomenal. And I just love hearing it. I talked to this one player. I don't want to mention his name. I talked to his financial advisor because I was thinking, you know, he and I would make a good partner in this building a house and selling it. So he goes, talk to my financial advisor. The guy threw 20 questions at me. I had the answers to two. And I'm like, forget it. This is. I mean, he was doing his job.
Right.
Like, he absolutely was doing his job. And I went to the player after the next day. We're playing golf, and I said, he goes, so what did so-and-so say? And I said, you know what? You've got the right guy, because you and I aren't doing a deal, not because we shouldn't be doing a deal, but he is protecting your ass. Like, I said to him, after I do this house and I sell it and I hopefully make a bunch of money, I'm going to send him all the answers to his questions. And hopefully we can do the next one. But I go, right now, you and I are not building a house together, because this guy has you protected every which way. And that's the way it should be. But I think that athletes today make so much money that they don't need to make mistakes. So they don't need, you know, when I started playing in the 80s, I mean, we made 75, 85, 95, 100, $1,000, and we were trying to take that money and make more money. Where if you're a young guy today making $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, you're trying to preserve that and make that money go to work for you, but not like when we played, where we felt like maybe we had to take a risk. Mm-hmm. These players do not today need to take a risk. They need somebody who they have, I believe most of them have, just protecting their money and investing it wisely. And, you know, markets are markets. They go up and down, and hopefully they, you know, all do well. But I think today is much better than probably when I played.
Well, there's some great stories. You know, there's some unbelievable success stories that came out of left field, you know. I know one, Brian Savage, who, you know, played for the Canadians. He's from my hometown, from Sudbury. And him and a buddy came up with an app years ago so when you got your Mercedes, high-end car dealerships, you know, you brought your Mercedes in to get serviced. So this is years ago, Russ, when apps were just coming on. Mm-hmm. And what happened is, as soon as you left the dealership, you picked up your car, your phone, they said they got this app that bings an alert to you, and you answer one question. And the question is, 1 to 5, how was your experience?
Right.
Okay. And pick 1 to 5. And if the thing was 4 or less, okay,
yeah,
it automatically went to the owner of the dealership, and he could do with it what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, and they were like, that's fucking amazing. Who invented that? You know, those guys made 6, 7, 8 million bucks on that idea.
Wow.
You know, back then. That was a long time ago, you know. So they sort of, I guess they didn't luck into it, but anyway. You make a great point, probably in life in general, is get help, man.
Well, just don't be the smartest guy in the room,
right?
Because it doesn't work. Brian Savage is a great guy. I got to know him a little bit. Came to Montreal after I was there. So I'm up at his cottage. I'm next door. Barry McKenzie was my coach, one of the greatest coaches of all time that never coached in the NHL. And Barry led Notre Dame and Saskatchewan, Wilcox's famous school that a bunch of us went to. I was near Sudbury.
Well, he's from Sudbury. That's where his cottage would be.
Yeah. So I went to the cottage, and next door was the Savages, his parents' cottage. Mm-hmm. So I missed him that time. I think he was not in the NHL. I was quite young. I was in my 20s. I was playing for the Leafs. So anyway, he was probably in college or junior or whatever. Mm-hmm. But a few years later, I talked to Barry McKenzie. He goes, yeah, Brian's made it. He's, you know, I go, yeah, he's playing in Montreal. And he goes, oh my God, he brings over these wines. Well, that's how I just got into red wine, was playing for Montreal. Because the trainer and the coaches and everybody loved red wine, and the players, obviously. That's, anyways, how it happened. But I missed out on the Brian Savage wines at the cottage, but I was up in Sudbury, you know, hanging out with his dad before he played in the NHL.
Yeah, and he ended up going to Miami University, which is in Michigan, actually. Miami of Michigan or something like that is where he went. He went to school. He's got a son there now who's coming up and show, like your kid. His son's probably about your kid's age, Lawton. Anyway, wonderful guy, has kept his roots in Sudbury, and he goes back every summer. And
yeah, you know, he bought a motorhome. So yeah. They live in Scottsdale in the winter, and then they get in the motorhome, and they drive to Ontario every summer and spend the summer up at the cottage. So.
Yeah, I'll just fill you in here. He doesn't drive it.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. It gets to Sudbury. I said, Savvy, that's like a 11,000-mile drive.
Oh.
He goes, yeah, I don't do it. I got a buddy there. Oh. Mike who drives it up for him all the time. But he always let on that he drove this thing.
Oh, because that's what he told me.
Bullshit, he doesn't drive it himself.
Did.
No, he doesn't
that's
drive
funny.
It himself.
That is funny.
Yeah, he's got
good
he's
for
got,
him.
He always has a friend there who he says, listen, you want a treat? You can drive this motorhome. And they go, because it's an unbelievable motorhome.
Yeah,
you
know? No, this thing's
$250,000 motorhome, right? And then he says, and then I always lose that friend because he went, fuck, man. Yeah, I didn't know it was that long.
Yeah.
Takes days, you know, to get there.
When I played in Dallas, I had a four-door black Mercedes. I love this car. Sedan.
Nice.
And I kind of got tied up with this guy at the dealership there.
What do you mean you got tied up?
Well, like he lived up to that, you know, the used car salesman guy that wasn't very ethical. Anyways, he says, I got a guy that, you know, why pay whatever X amount to ship your car back to LA from Dallas? Why don't you have this guy drive it? And I'm like, yeah, why not?
Uh-huh.
I'm in LA. I'm like, okay, car's not. It's before cell phones.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, where's my car? And he goes, well, I don't know. Let me check. They find the guy. He's in frickin' New Mexico on vacation, rolling around, probably being Johnny Big Shot.
Yeah.
And then I get my car and I'm like, God, the passenger side. It looks like there's been some body work done.
Oh, no.
The guy got in an accident, and the reason he was late was because he had to fix the side of the car. But he went to, like, $2 Chuck at Trader Joe's and said, hey, fix my car. And it was never the same.
Oh, no.
So I was trying to save a few bucks, and I ended up costing me more money than...
You're supposed to be a smart business guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, like I said, I've won some and I've lost some.
Best I've ever seen was with my buddy. I'm just dabbling whether to give his name or not. Anyway, super rich guy. Lives in Newport Beach, south of L.A. And we're driving around. I went to see him down there. He was living in Edmonton. Then he ended up retiring down there. And we're driving around. He's got like a Tesla. Okay, he's the first guy to have a Tesla and all this stuff. And we drive into a dealership, and like a high-end Ferrari dealership. And he said, I always wanted to do this. And I said, what?
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I know you know who I'm talking about. And he walked in and pulled out his credit card and said, I'll take the red one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and bought a Ferrari on his credit card. And they didn't even have to run it. They knew who he was, you know. And anyway, love those deals.
Everybody's getting sick of us talking about rich people.
Yeah, exactly. That's enough of that.
But Bill, we love you.
We love you, Bill. Yeah. Whoops. Yeah, that's okay. You can leave that in there. Billy C. Way to go, Billy. Rusty, we got a bunch of stuff that's happened. Anything tweak you the past weeks? What? Come on.
Today, it was a big announcement today. Eric Kendricks.
Yep.
My daughter's boyfriend got...
plays for the Vikings.
Number 54 for the Vikings. Got invited to the Pro Bowl. So he's all pro. And he wasn't invited, and he didn't get picked to go to the Pro Bowl. And then today it was announced that he got invited. So good on Eric Kendricks, and Allie and all her friends are going, his teammates are going, and they're going to have
Hawaii. Is that where it is?
No, I think it's in Florida.
Oh, where the Super Bowl is.
I thought it used to be in Hawaii. And Paris was like, they're going to, Disney World, and I'm like, Disney World, Hawaii? She goes, no, it's in Florida. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I knew that.
Oh, okay. Well, no, good for him.
I didn't know that, but.
Must be a big day for the young lad.
Yeah, so now he's all pro and Pro Bowl. So those are those hashtags that don't take away from you.
rest isn't of your that something, man? Good for him. Life.
Yeah, so that was exciting. Last weekend, Western Michigan University hockey team, my son's hockey team, they won both games. And
you're cooking.
So that that was good. And, you know, everything's good. My golf game is on fuego.
Oh. Oh. Were you, 'cause you're shitty a couple weeks
ago. I am shitty. And yeah. Today on I played with Roberto Dax and Keely Aquilini, who own the Canucks, and they're down here at their house, and we're playing golf every day, which I freaking love. It's great. I got tunes, cigars going, and we're we're playing golf every day, and it's just a blast. And which is odd for me because I don't play a lot of golf, and I've been playing every day. And today on the back, I was like, get this, Jimmy, on 10, birdie, 11, par 4, birdie, par 5, birdie.
Net? Like gross score or with strokes?
No, you asshole. Birdie, birdie. Yeah. And then on 12,
the
that one over with the water on the right, I freaking lipped out.
For hole in one?
Yeah, I lipped out.
And you made another birdie.
Nope. I made 5 par. I lipped out and it rolled by about 10 feet. So exciting news for Russ. So now I'm like a 15 handicap.
Yeah, but what did you shoot? Did you get a number or did you go bananas
shot,
after that?
I shot 47 on the front and I shot 40 on the back.
40 on with a 2-under start. Okay, not bad for a 15.
For me, I'm a high handicap. So if, like for me on Fuego is like, you know, 87.
You're a chop for sure.
Yeah, I am. Not like you. What is your handicap?
I'm a 6 that I finished at last year.
No wonder you're divorced.
Yeah, exactly. I remember interviewing for my first job at Molson. And, you know, I'm feeling it was my first job, first full-time serious job. And then you got to fill out whatever on your resume or whatever. Hobbies, you know, pastimes. And who the fuck didn't stop me saying, never put golf down as a pastime? Okay, because you will not get hired, right? And of course, I didn't not only do that, Russ, I went, serious golfer, right? And the guy went, this may stop you from getting this job. You're like, at that time, I was a 2 handicap, you know, in my early 20s. And he said, you're a 2 handicap? And I said, yes. He goes, no, you're not. And I said, I am. And he went, no, you're not.
I'm helping you.
And I remember, this is a true story. So I ended up joining a golf club here, the Edmonton Country Club. And I mean, I love the game. I'm addicted to the game and I couldn't play enough. And of course, immediately playing too much golf, you know, for my first job, at eventually getting to the point of, you know, sneaking out, calling in fucking sick, you know, all this shit. I'm stuck up north doing sales calls. But like an idiot, I had choices to join clubs, and I joined the same golf course that my boss was a member at.
Yeah.
And I'm not lying, Russ, 18th hole.
You weren't the brightest bulb on the tree.
No, not the sharpest guy.
No.
And the 18th hole is a par 3 at the country club, and the entrance into the clubhouse wraps around the back of the 18th green. It comes up. That's how you got to drive. You can only get in that way. And I had the guy tuned up in the pro shop to make sure I don't match tee times with my boss, you know.
Yeah. Like,
he goes, I got you. Yeah, he's coming at 2. You're going to be good. He won't see you out there and all this shit. And then I hit my ball into the bunker, greenside trap, which is in between the green and the driveway. And I see the guy in the pro shop telling me, get down. Okay. And I'm going, what? He goes, get down. Don's coming in. Your boss, Don, he's coming in. And I'm not lying, Russ. I fucking flop right into the bottom of the trap. And the guys are looking at me thinking I had a fucking heart attack. And I'm waiting, and I peer up. So those are my days in golf, sneaking around.
There's some great stories of guys who worked and were in sales. Dougal Milne, who I rented my place from in Maui, and he was a PGA teaching pro. But he was a... alcohol rep on Maui and a golfer, and he did the same thing. He would make all these calls and get all his orders done in 3 hours, and then he'd go play golf every day, and he won tournaments over there, and I think he worked for like Seagram's and all these you know, and there's nobody over there checking. It's just like, are you making the sales? And he had to call all the bars and the hotels, and he'd get everything done in the morning.
Yeah.
And then he'd be on the golf course just freaking playing golf every day. He said it was the greatest job ever.
Sure.
Yeah, but golf is a funny game. It's an awful game.
It's an awful game. Takes too long.
Oh, my
God. Women don't like it very much. I wish I would have learned squash. anyway, we got, there's a bunch of stuff today that we got to get to. Is this guy a real friend of yours, Todd Mahovlich? Is this guy keeps tweeting me stuff about you.
Yeah.
And he always has questions for us, but I always throw it out there, Rusty, for questions. And we got a bunch that came in today. And Mahovlich says, I haven't missed a show. Please don't do any more recordings in the morning.
Oh,
Russ. Yeah, we need Russ at night when he's had a few White Claws.
Okay? Toddy boy, I love it. I love it.
There's a picture. I'm going to put it on my Twitter of you. Okay. Oh, yeah. I don't know what do they call these gifts or whatever. I don't know what it is, but it's a great picture of you. And the headline is, oh my God, that's terrible. The White Claw Brewery burned down. Yeah.
I wonder where that picture came from.
It's a great picture.
I've never seen it.
It's from my buddy Mark May, who's a rabid listener, my old
boss.
No,
but I wonder where the picture's from. I get the comment, but I don't
but
know.
But no, he might know. That's what I'm saying. He sent it to me.
Oh, okay.
So I'll have to find out where he got it. So some of the thoughts for today is you know, there's surveys now that are out. There was one today that came out, I think, about they surveyed 400 players who they thought were the best players in the league right now. Connor McDavid wins this thing by a landslide, like 65%.
Really?
Connor McDavid. And then Sid gets 10 or 15. I don't know. I was talking to Stevie this morning. And then Ovechkin doesn't even show up on this thing.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. The All-Star Games this weekend. Here's an idea, Russ. I want to know your thoughts. Should the best team in the NHL, that being the team that holds the best record, receive the number one pick in the next draft as a reward for performance? Then the bottom teams fight over picks 2 through whatever.
No. Fuck, who's sending you this shit?
Well, it's not me. It was me.
Fucking Dumb and Dumber?
Well, it sounded like not a bad idea. I said, I'm going to float this with Russ.
You know? The best team overall gets the first pick.
Well, let me finish. It says, we understand it is designed to help teams improve, but would getting the number one pick encourage excellence?
Do you know why the Montreal Canadiens were the greatest team in the NHL from the 70s? Because every year they would trade an old player to LA and get the first pick overall, and then they built a dynasty. So if you want one team to win the cup year after year, give them the first pick, or... Well, except in Edmonton's, situation. But the Montreal Canadiens, year after year, were the best team in the league because they would get older players that were really, really good, and they would trade them away, and they would get these great players, Guy Lafleur being one of them. And then they would have they had this dynasty. That makes no sense. How does that make any sense? The reason we go through these rebuilds... LA Kings, mm-hmm. Vancouver Canucks, is because they're really good, and they get to that point where they have overpaid older players, and then those players, you know, retire or whatever, they move on, and these young players come in, and then they rebuild these teams, and you have to rebuild through the draft. Lucky, you get lucky on a few trades. I have to say the Boston Bruins under Cam Neely have done the best job in the league because they've been a really, really good team for a long time after winning. Mm-hmm. And it's through the draft. I mean, but gosh, if you gave the best team in the league the best player potentially the next year, I mean, it's going to be a domination. Doesn't make sense. So whoever said that...
No, it's a friend of mine.
Yeah, tell your friend to go back to playing ping pong.
Number one pick would encourage excellence. You know, if not the number one pick, how about the last pick in round
but
one?
But that's why they have the lottery now, is so that the teams that they can't sandbag and be totally shitty, and like Pittsburgh did, so that they got Mario, that you can't sandbag and it's a guarantee. It's not a guarantee that they're going to get the first pick overall. So,
So I have a question for you then.
You know what? We should go back to when you were married to the doctor and you belonged to the country club.
What happened to my life? What happened to my life?
Is your buddy your roommate?
Yeah.
The guy coming up with the ideas? Is he the guy going to Costco and buying toilet paper?
I was going to get a roommate, Russ. Everyone said no. Okay. I'm alone. I'm alone out here.
Well, fuck, the government's paying for your rent, so, I mean.
Stop.
Why need a roommate?
Stop it. You know, you used to be a lovable drunk. Now you're just cranky, okay? You're cranky. Don't forget you had two birdies today. Hang on to that.
Yeah.
So say you got a team, you got a five-year goal.
I had three, actually, but okay. I didn't talk about the front.
Yeah, well, we don't care anymore.
Okay.
Say you got a five-year window with the team, Russ. So I'm going to ask you something then, because you bring up an interesting bias about the draft picks. So if you were going to have the best shot at being successful in your fifth year, say not from not making playoffs to making the playoffs, or you don't necessarily have to win the Stanley Cup, are you going to, if you could only sort of pick one thing, are you looking at draft picks, scouting, management, or coaching?
Whew.
Is that a good question? Give me some love. Give me some love here. I worked on that. Okay.
Well, are you talking like you're in the fifth year?
Well, say you got this rebuild you're talking about, right? So everyone talks about a rebuild.
It's either a rebuild or San Jose. Let's talk about the San Jose Sharks right now.
Okay.
They signed all these guys thinking they were going to win, and it looks like they're not. And now they're screwed because they got these big contracts. So they're that team that are like, oh no, what did we just do? Because we're going to have all these big contracts. If they are not going to make it,
right,
they're screwed because they've signed these guys, unless they can trade them to a team that potentially is going to win and unload those contracts. So in your fifth year, say you're riding the wave.
And do you want to pause and burp another 100 times or what?
Hey? Oh my God. Stop. Sorry.
This will be
sorry
good
to everybody.
Yeah, that's good. No, I like it. I like it.
No, nobody likes burping. But it's like almost a hiccup, but it's a burp.
Yeah. No, I think we know what it is.
Yeah. Okay. Fuck off. But if you're in your fourth, fifth year and you can see guys like their numbers are going down and you're not going to win, if they're on the end of a contract, you're good. If they're in the middle, oh boy, you know, then you're going through, look at LA. I mean, they're just, you know, they got these guys left over from the Stanley Cup, and deservedly so. They got the long-term deals. Nobody can say LA made a mistake with the players that they signed, because they won, and now they're living through that, you know, and they're waiting for these guys
that
to
hell.
But they're living through it, and then they're building from underneath with young players, and so it just depends. Like, do you go, like, if you're that close in your fifth year, do you trade for that guy? Do you sign that guy and go for it, and then you're stuck for 5 years if it doesn't work out? Because if you win, everyone will give you a pass. LA Kings right now, they're getting a pass because they won. They won cups, right?
So Chicago, yeah.
Chicago, I have to say, he was doing a great job, and maybe he still is doing a great job, but he would, after every year he would, and cup, he would trade a big-time player because he couldn't afford him, and he'd get something back, and then a couple of his deals went sideways. He didn't get what he let go. But for a while there, he was looking like a genius, and that's where I go back to Boston. Boston, man, Cam Neely, that freaking guy, he's a good friend of mine.
Right.
And he's doing a great job because, you know what? He pays attention from the ground up. Cam Neely cares from the guy or girl sweeping the floors to the owner. I mean, he cares about every person in that organization, including the players. And when the players are struggling, he's the first guy to be there and and give him a pat on the back and go, I know, I've been there. Like,
so you talk like that's a rarity from an upper management guy to go in and talk to all the players.
100%.
Is that what separates this guy?
100%.
That'd be you. That'd be you. You'd probably do that.
Well, Sir Savard and Pat Quinn were the two best because if you were doing really well, they'd come by and go, hey, you're playing well, and it made you feel like $100 or $1,000 or whatever, $1,000,000. But when you but when you were struggling, they would put their arm around you and go, I know you're working hard and it'll come. And when they did that to me, all the weight went off my shoulders because I just felt like I was failing. And in life, people, I don't care who you are, what you're doing, you need a pat on the back, or you need somebody to assure you that you are trying hard. And when you're trying hard to do the right thing and it's not working out, and somebody of authority or a boss or whoever, maybe a parent or teacher, comes up to you and goes, you know what? I know you're working hard. Just keep doing what you're doing. That kid, that guy for San Francisco, the player that got cut 6 times.
Right.
And Kyle Shanahan, the coach, said, I missed all of the interview, but he said something like, just stay with me, stick with it. I know that you're going to be successful at something on my team. And I didn't hear the whole story. That's a great example last weekend. And he's the best player and set some record for rushing. Number 11, I think.
I forget.
I don't know his name, but the guy got cut 6 times. Like, who? Like, you're thinking, okay, I got cut 6 times. Maybe I should, I got cut twice. Maybe I should look for another job.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So that's a totally interesting thing to say, that your take on it, and you're a knowledgeable guy, is when you ask draft pick scouting, coaching, management, and you come up with this, if you're a nice guy, you're going to turn bad into good, and there were probably other guys you would know who weren't like that. Harold Ballard probably wasn't.
No, Harold was great.
He was good? Okay.
Yeah, it was good with me.
Well, that's all that counts.
Yeah, he hated the media. It's kind of like our president in the U.S., Donald Trump. The media hates Donald Trump. The media in Canada were so unfair to Harold. It's the exact same thing. And he did great things behind the scenes that nobody knew about. And if they did, they didn't write about him because they loved beating him up in the media. And Harold was, oh my God, he was so great. He was... He made some bad hockey decisions, but he was a great, great guy for me. I loved him. I could tell 100 great stories about Harold and what he did for myself, my family, and some of my teammates. But, hockey decisions, maybe not so much.
So, Russ, you know what we're going to do? Because I throw it out to questions every week, and we get some great questions from fans. A lot of them are repeats, folks. Sorry, so we've covered it before. But always I get, can Russ tell more Harold Ballard stories? So what we're going to do, Russ, is we're going to have a Harold Ballard show.
Yeah, we should.
We're gonna dedicate a show to Harold Ballard. John Brophy was another guy.
Oh,
and,
boy.
So I promise you we'll do that. We're gonna dedicate one show, and we'll give you a chance to think about a bunch of stuff.
King Clancy, I used to have lunch with him all the time, and... King was unbelievable. I walked in, so people who are hockey fans can relate to this. King was at, so I was at center ice in the hallway.
Yep.
At Maple Leaf Gardens, and King was at the very top. If you ever looked north in the building, it rose up And so he was up top on the causeway, and I was going to practice, and he's like, "Rusty, how are you today?" This is King Clancy, right?
Right.
"Hey, King, how you doing?"
And what was his gig at the time then? Was he the GM?
I think I talked about it on the show. He was Harold's best friend. And the young guys, would go into the Hot Stove Lounge, which was a famous hot stove restaurant in Old Maple Leaf Gardens. And after practice, we'd have he'd buy us steak sandwiches and tell us stories. And they were just unbelievable. And then the bill would come, and before anybody could grab it, he would grab it and goes, "I keep signing these bills. They go upstairs, and I never see them again. I don't know where they go." He goes, "In fact, I just got signed to another 10-year contract." He goes, "And I don't know what I do here."
Good guy.
But anyways, the story I was telling about King was if you think about a hockey rink, I'm at center ice and he's at the goal line. That's how far away we were. And he could see me, and he's like, Rusty, or, you know, "How you doing? Blah, blah, blah." And like 2 days later, he died.
Oh, no.
Like he was, King was phenomenal. And he told us a bunch of great stories. So I'd love to tell King stories and Harold stories and John Brophy. Oh my God, we got to get Al Afraidy on the show to tell some bro stories, or Gary Lehman. Gary Lehman has some of the best John Brophy stories.
Well, the Suspendables is going to get bigger and better as we move along. The partner love it, and they're going to do a bunch of new things over the next several months that certainly will include regular guest spots and a bunch of other stuff that we're going to do. So thanks for everyone for listening. We got more stuff, Russ.
Oh, God. Is Dumb and Dumber, has he got some more questions for us?
Shut up.
The first team overall should have first pick.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Yeah. You know, okay, what's the next question?
Okay. last week, a guy won a lawsuit, apparently, in a beer men's league. He got hit. Dirty hit or something, blah, blah, blah. Got his teeth knocked out. Got pretty badly hurt. Sued a guy and won $700,000 8 years later.
Wow.
In a court deal.
Fuck, I'm going to start playing fucking senior hockey.
That's what I said. Russ, you and I will join. You cross-check me in the throat.
Russ, put a mask on. Nope. Yeah. I'm trying to get $700,000.
I'm trying to get $1 million. This topic, we talk about it from time to time. You know, and the question today is, you've talked about frequently about big, dirty hits on the ice and some real nasty fights in hockey. Is there ever any circumstance during a game where Russ believes the police could or should get involved with an altercation? In other words, what would a guy have to do during a game to warrant the cops arresting him? Does the heat of competition make things different, whereby you can't hold a guy responsible like he might be outside of sports?
So when Mike Milbury and the Boston Bruins went into the stands and he was hitting the guy over the head with his own shoe, that would probably be a time when the cops should show up.
That's off the ice, though.
Yeah. No. We have police on the ice, and they're wearing a uniform, and they have a number on their back, and they play on the teams on either side. And we've had that for years. I mean, Dave Smanko, we talk about on the show, who, when Dave played, he was the police officer, he was the captain, he was the chief. And if the other team didn't behave and broke the law, then he came out and settled things. So no, we don't need police officers out there. And if you asked a police officer that question, he would go, that's a dumb question.
They can police themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another question here, Rusty. Is there a coach in the NHL that you always wished you would have been able to play for?
I think...
Like, what about Scotty Bowman? Did you ever play
for
Scotty?
Yeah, I was just going to say Scotty Bowman. I think even though I've, you know, heard how tough he was and stuff, I think I would have... Especially after I went through Montreal with Pat Burns and I had to play the defensive style game, that I think if I had went to Detroit, which there was a rumor at the deadline I was going there, and I ended up obviously didn't go, I think I would have been okay, but who knows with Scotty. But that I probably would have loved to play for Scotty after the fact that I'd had Pat Burns, you know, teach me how to play defensive hockey. And
oh, you love that, do you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah.
Russ, is the day of the dynasty over? You were talking about, we talked about this earlier in the show. You know, what makes a great team? What, how do they rebuild in the 4 or 5 years? You talked about Cam Neely, what an off the page thing this guy does to make his team successful. Is the day of the dynasty over now because of lottery picks or for many other reasons that teams won't dominate as like they did in the Islander days, the Oilers, the Canadians?
Yeah. I think that's a good question. I mean, 5 years, 4 years, can teams do it? We've seen a cut, like two here, two there. It's tough. 4 years, 5 years to win in a row. You've got to have the timing has to be perfect on the money side of right. great players. So if they're all in contract for 4, 5, 6 years and they're mm-hmm. staying together, and I think, you know, you have a shot, but wow, that would be tough. I don't know how you do that with drafting and players' ages and time of contracts. I think it's almost impossible, but even
well, what we are seeing though is teams that aren't supposed to win are winning.
You yeah.
know, that come out of left field and well, St. Yeah. Louis, of course, the most recent example.
But they're a good team. They needed a goalie that could stop the puck, and and then the confidence started going, and they had you look at their team, they look great. I mean, they on paper they look great and they weren't playing well, and then they had a goalie that with a young rookie goalie that came in and gave everybody confidence, and then you look at their team and everyone's like, oh, I wish I had that player, I wish I had that player. But to have a team that could win 4 or 5 in a row is pretty tough. Just because look at even Edmonton that couldn't win recently right. with these great young players that they drafted, and they get too expensive and they got to trade them. I mean, you got to make room to sign people. So financially, I just think it's almost impossible.
Yeah, so probably the salary
which
cap,
is,
right?
Which is
preventing all
which
that.
Is a good thing because I think that you spread the wealth and make team. I think it's made the league better. Mm-hmm. You know, before when I played in the 80s, Frank, it was, okay, is Edmonton going to win or is, you know, right. New York Islanders going to win? We don't have a shot.
Right. Right. Before we go, I got a very interesting question for you. That it's about you and your two brothers, Jeff and Bruce. And Rick Raymond passed this on to me today. And I thought, yeah, I could ask Russ this. Jeff was no half miler in the NHL. Jeff played a long time in the NHL until he got hurt.
Undrafted, too.
What? Undrafted? Mm-hmm. He won a Stanley Cup with the Oilers.
Yep.
He was, you know, a big part of all the teams that he played for. And yet, compared to you, Russ, this guy says he was sort of under the radar. And you didn't hear as much about Jeff Courtnell as you did about Russ Courtnell. And he's asking, why do you think that is? And is it maybe because you played in two huge hockey centers or that you're just way fucking better?
No, he's right, because I played in Toronto and Montreal. And then Jeff was a great player. If you looked at his stats, I mean, guy scored almost 400 goals undrafted. And he led the before the new overtime league overtime rule where they play till there is a winner. Jeff was like one of the highest overtime goal scorers in the NHL, and yeah, big goal times a goal scorer and all that.
Yeah.
But won a Stanley Cup, and I agree with that he played in Washington. He
Edmonton,
played in St. Louis. He played in Boston.
Vancouver.
And when when he got to Vancouver, people started, you know, taking notice in Canada. But if you look at his stats, they're phenomenal. He played over 1,000 games, and and he was a stud. And so, yeah, the markets are, I think there's players today that, like, if Ovechkin played in Canada, are you kidding me? That he wouldn't be right there with McDavid. They'd be fighting over who's the best player. I mean, he's in Washington. And
sure.
In the U.S., they're probably saying the same thing.
Right.
But, yeah, I think it, that question to be answered is just he played in the U.S. more than he played in Canada.
Right. Good point. So they're going to ask about what was the dynamic with your brother, Bruce, who, if people don't know, you have a brother, Bruce, who didn't play hockey. And people, Rick goes on to ask, was this something that was difficult on your brother, Bruce, that you guys...
He did play hockey, and he played in the WHL and was a good player, and he was a tough guy. And then he quit when he was 20, overage player in Seattle, and he just didn't like fighting anymore. He was fighting for other people, not himself, and he quit. And I'm sure it's a regret for him because he was a good player, and who knows what would have happened if he kept playing, because one, he was freaking tough and is tough as nails. And and we all know how that works in the NHL and other pro leagues. But we don't talk a lot about it because I think he has some regrets that he quit when he did. And why he quit, and he was a good player. He just finished early. He stopped playing when he was 20. He quit at Christmas. So in the WHL, you get like a 10-day break, and he was an overage player, and he just said, "No, I'm done."
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Your brother Jeff, who I know, beats to a different drummer, eh? Russ?
Yeah, the guy who shoe-checked you twice in one night.
And, yeah, he shoe-checked me. He's got this... I remember when I first met your brother, I fell in love with him. I was telling some sort of lame story, and he started laughing maniacally in my face.
Yeah. He's got that crazy laugh. And then you start looking at him going, was it that funny, or is he doing something?
Totally, Russ. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. Something's up, because that joke is funny, but it's not that funny.
You know what? I it's so funny you say that, because I've known him for years.
Yeah.
And I walk away, and I'm walking to my room drunk.
He's got a poisoned mind. In fun.
I know. But I've walked to my room. I'm going, this guy, he either wants to have me killed.
Yeah.
Or
No, not killed. But
or he, no, not killed.
He wants your room number, and he wants to go and put ice in your bed.
I know.
Put silicone over your toilet seat, shaving cream in your comb, or Vaseline, I should say, and then order your room service that shows up at 5 a.m. when you got in at 4.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. He's got a poisoned mind. Is that how you put it? It's hilarious. Yeah, it's like, is this guy screwing with me? Is it what, it's just hilarious. Anyway, I love him to death.
He told me two stories today about the, I told him we were doing the podcast. And after he told me the two stories, he goes, maybe not. Don't tell those two stories.
Oh, give us one of them. Come on.
Tom Arnold.
Yeah. I know Tom. I met him at your function there.
Yeah. So Jeff and I put a team together, and celebrity hockey team.
Right.
And we just retired. We go to Seattle. And it's Microsoft, Sun Microsystems, and one other tech company, and then NHL All-Stars kind of thing, and actors.
Right.
Tom Arnold's been sober at that point for like 10 years.
Right.
He meets this guy from Microsoft, and he's playing on the team, and he's like a big shot. Like, he's a head of Windows, or like, this guy is like, There's Gates, and then this guy.
Yeah.
And Tom is like, oh my God, this is going to be unbelievable. I came up here for this charity event, and now I'm going to get this gig. like, Microsoft's going to hire me to come to their events. And so we're in the lobby of the W, I guess. We're all staying there, the team. And Jeff tells me, so Tom is talking to this guy, and they're like, I think they might have been born in the same freaking hometown. Like, it's perfect.
Right.
Tom's sober. He's an actor. He's a comedian.
Yeah.
He's going to, like, get a gig for the rest of his life. And this absolute maniac runs up to Tom in the lobby of the hotel. And everybody knows Tom when he wasn't sober. He was into cocaine.
Sure,
That. And he's married to Roseanne. This guy comes running up to him and says, he sees this actor in the middle of the lobby talking to this guy who doesn't look like he works for Microsoft.
Yeah.
Just two normal, like a normal guy. And he says, Tom, I got hookers and blow upstairs in the room. Come on, come upstairs. Let's go right now. And he's like, guy looks at Tom Arnold, the ex-cocaine addict.
Oh, no.
And goes, I'll talk to you tomorrow. And Tom looked at this guy and went, you just fucked up. Like, just looked at him and went, are you kidding me? Like, I've been sober for, and now the Microsoft guy's out the door in his limousine going home. And Tom's looking at this guy going, are you kidding me? I've been sober for 10 years.
You just blew it.
Just blew the best deal of my life.
Oh, no.
And, yeah.
It doesn't take much. It doesn't take much. Yeah.
But fantastic. Anyways, Tom stayed the weekend. He was our coach. He was our celebrity coach. Yeah. And he was, oh, my God. He told that story the next day, and Jeff reminded me of that story today. He goes, you got to tell the Tom Arnold cocaine story when he didn't do cocaine.
There we go. My favorite Tom Arnold story. That goes right up there now, though. That might be number one. Is the fishing derby that you guys started, and Mess took it over when he came to Vancouver. And quickly, this is 20 guys pay a bunch of dough to go up north to the Queen Charlotte Lodge, which is almost in Alaska, way up there, and you fish with a celeb in your boat, and for like 2 days, man. It's an unbelievable event. I don't know if anyone picked it up or if it's still going, but and what they had, like, Isaiah Thomas was up there, Chelly was there, you were there, and Tom Arnold was there, and Mess is running this thing. And Mess isn't quite the wild ass people think he is when it comes down to business, you know, when the chips are down and we got to run. And he was very, very guarded a little bit about protecting the owner and made sure everyone was good and well behaved. And Tom Arnold's there chewing on, you know, he chews those cigars, Rusty, like he just eats those cigars. And it's all guys, it's this beautiful lodge, and the owner is a super nice guy, quiet, really, really reserved guy. And I can see Mark sort of telling me, I was emceeing it, telling me, okay, just dial it down a bit. This guy's in the room, right? And Mess can take a joke with anyone, right? But I, like, fuck, when Mess told you to do something, right, you did it. And he said, just lay back, okay? Just don't. And so I had to dial it way back. It's like, gentlemen, would you please, your attention, we'd like to introduce you to the owner. You'd know who the guy is. I forget his name. And we'd like to introduce you to the owner of the lodge.
Dave Husby.
Okay, if we could all have your attention. And now Dave comes out, okay? And normally, when I saw this, okay, the guy's got big eyebrows. There's no doubt about it. He's got big, bushy eyebrows. But fuck me, Russ, I was never going to make a reference to it, okay? Mess said, Jimmy, if he came up to me, let me say, if you say one fucking word about this guy's eyebrows, I will never be your friend again, okay? Right? He tells me. He goes, don't say a word, okay? I said, Mess, look at them, though. He goes, I said, everyone's going to notice them. He said, I don't care. Don't do it, okay? I don't want you, ripping on someone here, especially this guy. I said, no problem. I won't say a word. So anyway, it's like, would you please welcome... Okay, what's his name? Husby?
Tom.
Would you please welcome Dave Husby? So he comes out, and we're standing on the fireplace, and the room just sort of goes quiet, and everyone's looking at the guy going, holy Jesus, look at those eyebrows. You know, I sort of think, no one's saying anything. And Tom, you could part them, and Tom Arnold goes, okay, like it's dead silence, And he goes, "Holy fuck, dude! What's with the eyebrows? Oh my God!" Okay, and kept going and going and going. And I can see Mess just cringing. And then I was like, he just wouldn't stop, you know. And I got up, I cut him off, you know. I jumped up there and thank you very much. And I said, "Fellas, by the way, tomorrow make sure you tip your guides, right?" And Tom just turns to one of the girls who's there. There was only two of them, and he points right at her and goes, "I want to tip her. I'll give her a tip." It was just like this guy had no filter, man, no filter. It was nuts.
He's great. Tom's so good.
He's a great guy. He's a great guy. Maniac guy, and
was,
like I say, was a maniac. Yeah, I know. Listen, I'm well versed at the maniac. I know what he went through. And anyway, great story, great guy. Rusty, another show in the books. Okay, good job. We want to thank all the shirts went out, Russ. They all got mailed. If you can believe it.
Did you blow smoke in the boxes?
I did, and all of them, just so it would feel at home. Thanks a lot to Elite Promotional Marketing, who's looking after our shirts that everyone's going to get this week if they haven't got them already, the Suspendables T-shirts. And because of that, they have stepped up and they want to open up a web store for us. So you'll be able to buy any sort of collectible thing you want, clothing, office stuff, golf equipment, whatever, golf bags and all that with the Suspendables logo. It's growing, Russ, every day.
Of course it is.
Great job, Russ. You must be tired, Russ. Okay, you're about to have a nap, aren't you?
Exhausted.
Go back to doing whatever you're doing. Great job, Russ. We'll talk to everybody.
All right, bud. See you next week.